Now, as Donald Trump looks for pathways through an increasingly tough re-election campaign, he's turned to a familiar issue. At the weekend, he asked places of worship to reopen. Most religious leaders have voluntarily closed their doors during the coronavirus lockdown, but new polling shows a small majority of Americans rather keen to return to the pews. Dr. David Smith of the US Studies Center has been following the debate.
He said, quite out of the blue, that he wanted churches to reopen because he considers them an essential service. In the United States, there's been this big thing around essential services being allowed to remain open. And in a lot of states, churches aren't classified as essential services, or places of worship aren't classified as essential services. About half of all states have actually allowed places of worship to remain open, often with observing social distance, but a lot haven't. And Trump actually said that he would override governors who wouldn't open churches and other places of worship. So he's really positioning himself as the defender of religion in the United States, as the man who is going to reopen the churches, even if the governors won't.
There's a bigger proxy war here, though, isn't there, David? With so many things that Donald Trump says about religion, it's rarely just about religion. What's the bigger war that goes on behind this?
Donald Trump has such high support, especially among evangelical Christians, because he constantly tells them that they are under attack. And it feeds into this much bigger culture war that's been going on for many decades now, where especially conservative people of faith believe that they're under siege from a hostile secular society, and especially the media and the culture industry and the government. And in his campaign in 2015 and 2016, Donald Trump, despite the fact he's not particularly devout himself, said to Christians essentially that he had the same enemies as them, and that he was prepared to fight for them because he wasn't politically correct. It's worth noting that in terms of places of worship actually being open, that's not that important in the scheme of things. And it's interesting that evangelical churches, which are the strongest supporters of Trump, they in many ways are the ultimate pioneers of ways of doing religious worship outside of physical churches. And I mean, one of the major messages of evangelical Christianity is that you don't need a physical building, and you don't need a minister. You don't need all of these mediators between yourself and God. Worship is entirely possible outside of those settings. So it's not really about the necessity of churches being physically open. Not to downplay the fact that they are really important meeting places, they're very important social hubs, and people certainly do really miss that side of it. But nonetheless, it's more of a political battle than one that is actually about keeping churches open.
It's also been posited, though, as a battle over values. I noticed that someone said, look, why are the cannabis stores open in states where cannabis is legal, but the churches are closed? This is a values statement. I suppose there's something in that.
It's funny, that seems to confirm the prediction made by the late comedian Bill Hicks that if marijuana were taxed, it wouldn't just be legal, it would be a sacrament. Trump has also had something to say about this. He didn't talk about the marijuana shops, but he did say on Friday that in some states, abortion clinics and liquor stores were still open because they're considered essential services, whereas churches are not, and that isn't right. And that most directly gets to the values war at the heart of all of this, that Trump and his supporters, I mean, they don't want abortion clinics open at all, let alone for abortion clinics to be open when churches are closed. So, yes, it really is being framed around values.
Is it interesting, or is it remarkable, that he went out of his way to also refer to the necessity to reopen synagogues and mosques? Maybe not that surprising that he would make the reference to synagogues, but I was surprised that he did emphasize mosques as well, given the fractious relationships he's had with America's Muslim communities.
Yeah, he certainly does. And I think that this was to cover himself in a way to say that this is really about freedom of religion. It's not just about his particular Christian audience. I mean, the chances are he didn't actually write the statement that he delivered. It didn't sound like something that he had written. It sounded like something that had been crafted by a speechwriter who was in touch with that conservative religious community. Now, it's worth noting that when evangelicals talk about religious freedom, they often mention other religions as well, particularly Judaism and Islam, because they do want to make it a broader issue than something that is just about them. I'm reminded that President Dwight Eisenhower believed that religion in general in America was extremely important to the social fabric and very important to fighting communism. He actually often included Islam in statements about religious freedom. But certainly evangelical groups that ever since the 1990s have made religious freedom a real centerpiece of American foreign policy, they often have quite consciously included Islam. And this is why the United States Religious Freedom in the World reports, which are published every year by the State Department, have reports condemning America's own allies for mistreatment of Muslim radicals in their country. So, I mean, when you go all in for religious freedom, rhetorically at least, you have to include everyone. And even though that probably wouldn't be Trump's own inclination, whoever wrote that speech, who probably is quite closely connected to that religious freedom community and that religious freedom agenda, certainly saw it as necessary to cast the net as widely as possible.
Has there been a lot of apocalyptic language around coronavirus over the past 2 or 3 months in the United States? Has it become as much a theological showdown as it is a political dispute?
I'm actually surprised by how little apocalyptic language there has been around coronavirus compared to some other issues where there's a lot of apocalyptic language. Yeah, every time tensions escalate between the US and Iran, there's apocalyptic language. There's apocalyptic language around every election that I can remember, but not around coronavirus. And one of the reasons for that is, I believe, that so many conservative white evangelicals are strong supporters of Trump. And they believe that the more panic and the more concern there is about coronavirus, the more that endangers Trump's re-election chances. Now, they see Trump failing to get re-elected. That's the apocalyptic event. It's not actually the coronavirus itself, which they're more inclined to believe Trump's rhetoric and conservative rhetoric around this, that it's not such a huge deal, that the response could be worse than the virus itself, and it's really important to get the economy back on track. So I think what the coronavirus has shown us, even though you'd think this is a classic candidate for sign of the apocalypse, I mean, it's plague, essentially. It's a kind of worldwide disease that we haven't seen for 100 years. At least in the US, it has not been taken as an apocalyptic sign. And that really reflects nothing more than the political alignment of most of the white evangelicals who otherwise probably would have considered it an apocalyptic event.
Yeah, that's a surprising conclusion, but very good that you've been able to point that out. Always good to talk to you. Dr. David Smith, a senior researcher at the US Studies Centre at the University of Sydney. Thanks for joining us on the program, David.
My pleasure.
And this is the Religion and Ethics Report.